Chapter 5. Not such a one as this, Mr. Copperfield wouldn't have liked, apostrophe said Peggotty. That I say, and that I swear. Apostrophe, good heavens. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried my mother, you'll drive me mad. Was ever any poor girl so ill-used by her servants as I am? Why do I do myself the injustice of calling myself a girl? Have I never been married, Peggotty? Apostrophe, apostrophe, God knows you have, ma'am, apostrophe returned Peggotty. Then, how can you dare, apostrophe said my mother, you know I don't mean how can you dare, Peggotty, but how can you have the heart to make me so uncomfortable and say such bitter things to me when you are well aware that I haven't, out of this place, a single friend to turn to? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the more's the reason, apostrophe returned Peggotty, for saying that it won't do. No. That it won't do. No. No price could make it do. No. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I thought Peggotty would have thrown the candlestick away, she was so emphatic with it. How can you be so aggravating, apostrophe said my mother, shedding more tears than before, as to talk in such an unjust manner. How can you go on, as if it was all settled and arranged, Peggotty, when I tell you over and over again, you cruel thing, that beyond the commonest civilities nothing has passed. You talk of admiration. What am I to do? If people are so silly as to indulge the sentiment, is it my fault? What am I to do, I ask you? Would you wish me to shave my head and black my face, or disfigure myself with a burn, or a scald, or something of that sort? I dare say you would, Peggotty. I dare say you'd quite enjoy it. Apostrophe, Peggotty seemed to take this aspersion very much to heart, I thought. And my dear boy, apostrophe cried my mother, coming to the elbow chair in which I was, and caressing me, my own little Davy. Is it to be hinted to me that I am wanting in affection for my precious treasure, the dearest little fellow that ever was? Apostrophe, apostrophe, nobody never went and hinted no such a thing, apostrophe said Peggotty. You did, Peggotty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned my mother. You know you did. What else was it possible to infer from what you said, you unkind creature, when you know as well as I do, that on his account only last quarter I wouldn't buy myself a new parasol, though that old green one is frayed the whole way up, and the fringe is perfectly mangy. You know it is, Peggotty. You can't deny it. Apostrophe then, turning affectionately to me, with her cheek against mine, am I a naughty mama to you, Davy? Am I a nasty, cruel, selfish, bad mama? Say I am, my child. Say yes, dear boy, and Peggotty will love you. And Peggotty's love is a great deal better than mine, Davy. I don't love you at all, do I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, at this, we all fell a-crying together. I think I was the loudest of the party, but I am sure we were all sincere about it. I was quite heartbroken myself, and am afraid that in the first transports of wounded tenderness I called Peggotty a beast. That honest creature was in deep affliction, I remember, and must have become quite buttonless on the occasion, for a little volley of those explosives went off, when, after having made it up with my mother, she kneeled down by the elbow chair and made it up with me. We went to bed greatly dejected. My sobs kept waking me, for a long time, and when one very strong sob quite hoisted me up in bed, I found my mother sitting on the coverlet, and leaning over me. I fell asleep in her arms, after that, and slept soundly. Whether it was the following Sunday, when I saw the gentleman again, or whether there was any greater lapse of time before he reappeared, I cannot recall. I don't profess to be clear about dates. But there he was, in church, and he walked home with us afterwards. He came in to look at a famous geranium we had, in the parlor window. It did not appear to me that he took much notice of it, but before he went he asked my mother to give him a bit of the blossom. She begged him to choose it for himself, but he refused to do that. I could not understand why, so she plucked it for him, and gave it into his hand. He said he would never, never part with it anymore, and I thought he must be quite a fool not to know that it would fall to pieces in a day or two. Peggotty began to be less with us of an evening than she had always been. My mother deferred to her very much more than usual, it occurred to me, and we were all three excellent friends. Still, we were different from what we used to be, and were not so comfortable among ourselves. Sometimes I fancied that Peggotty perhaps objected to my mother's wearing all the pretty dresses she had in her drawers, or to her going so often to visit at that neighbor's. But I couldn't, to my satisfaction, make out how it was. Gradually, I became used to seeing the gentleman with the black whiskers. I liked him no better than at first, and had the same uneasy jealousy of him, but if I had any reason for it beyond a child's instinctive dislike, and a general idea that Peggotty and I could make much of my mother without any help, it certainly was not the reason that I might have found if I had been older. No such thing came into my mind, or near it. I could observe, in little pieces, as it were, but as to making a net of a number of these pieces, and catching anybody in it, that was, as yet, beyond me. One autumn morning I was with my mother in the front garden, when Mr. Murdstone, I knew him by that name now, came by, on horseback. He reined up his horse to salute my mother, and said he was going to Lowestoft to see some friends who were there with a yacht, and merrily proposed to take me on the saddle before him, if I would like the ride. The air was so clear and pleasant, and the horse seemed to like the idea of the ride so much himself, as he stood snorting and pawing at the garden gate, that I had a great desire to go. So I was sent upstairs to Peggotty to be made spruce, and in the meantime Mr. Murdstone dismounted, and, with his horse's bridle drawn over his arm, walked slowly up and down on the outer side of the sweetbriar fence, while my mother walked slowly up and down on the inner to keep him company. I recollect Peggotty and I peeping out at them from my little window. I recollect how closely they seemed to be examining the sweetbriar between them, as they strolled along, and how, from being in a perfectly angelic temper, Peggotty turned cross in a moment, and brushed my hair the wrong way, excessively hard. Mr. Murdstone and I were soon off, and trotting along on the green turf by the side of the road. He held me quite easily with one arm, and I don't think I was restless usually, but I could not make up my mind to sit in front of him without turning my head sometimes, and looking up in his face. He had that kind of shallow black eye, I want a better word to express an eye, that has no depth in it to be looked into, which, when it is abstracted, seems from some peculiarity of light to be disfigured, for a moment at a time, by a cast. Several times when I glanced at him, I observed that appearance with a sort of awe, and wondered what he was thinking about so closely. His hair and whiskers were blacker and thicker, looked at so near, than even I had given them credit for being. A squareness about the lower part of his face, and the dotted indication of the strong black beard he shaved close every day, reminded me of the waxwork that had traveled into our neighborhood some half a year before. This, his regular eyebrows, and the rich white, and black, and brown, of his complexion confound his complexion, and his memory, made me think him, in spite of my misgivings, a very handsome man. I have no doubt that my poor dear mother thought him so too. We went to an hotel by the sea, where two gentlemen were smoking cigars in a room by themselves. Each of them was lying on at least four chairs, and had a large rough jacket on. In a corner was a heap of coats and boat cloaks, and a flag, all bundled up together. They both rolled onto their feet in an untidy sort of manner when we came in, and said, "Hello, Murdstone. We thought you were dead." "Not yet," said Mr. Murdstone. "And who's this shaver?" said one of the gentlemen, taking hold of me. "That's Davy," returned Mr. Murdstone.
"Davy who?"
said the gentleman.
"Jones?
Apostrophe, Copperfield, apostrophe said Mr. Murdstone. What? Bewitching Mrs. Copperfield's encumbrance? Apostrophe cried the gentleman. The pretty little widow? Apostrophe, Quinion, apostrophe said Mr. Murdstone. Take care, if you please. Somebody's sharp. Apostrophe, who is? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked the gentleman, laughing. I looked up, quickly, being curious to know. Only Brooks of Sheffield, apostrophe said Mr. Murdstone. I was quite relieved to find that it was only Brooks of Sheffield, for, at first, I really thought it was one. There seemed to be something very comical in the reputation of Mr. Brooks of Sheffield, for both the gentlemen laughed heartily when he was mentioned, and Mr. Murdstone was a good deal amused also. After some laughing, the gentleman whom he had called Quinion said, "And what is the opinion of Brooks of Sheffield, in reference to the projected business?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, I don't know that Brooks understands much about it at present, apostrophe replied Mr. Murdstone, but he is not generally favorable, I believe. Apostrophe, there was more laughter at this, and Mr. Quinion said he would ring the bell for some sherry in which to drink to Brooks. This he did, and when the wine came, he made me have a little, with a biscuit, and, before I drank it, stand up and say, "Confusion to Brooks of Sheffield." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the toast was received with great applause, and such hearty laughter, that it made me laugh too, at which they laughed the more. In short, we quite enjoyed ourselves. We walked about on the cliff after that, and sat on the grass, and looked at things through a telescope. I could make out nothing myself, when it was put to my eye, but I pretended I could, and then we came back to the hotel to an early dinner. All the time we were out, the two gentlemen smoked incessantly which, I thought, if I might judge from the smell of their rough coats, they must have been doing, ever since the coats had first come home from the tailor's. I must not forget that we went on board the yacht, where they all three descended into the cabin, and were busy with some papers. I saw them quite hard at work, when I looked down through the open skylight. They left me, during this time, with a very nice man with a very large head of red hair, and a very small shiny hat upon it, who had got a cross-barred shirt or waistcoat on, with Skylark in capital letters across the chest. I thought it was his name, and that as he lived on board ship, and hadn't a street door, to put his name on, he put it there instead. But when I called him Mr. Skylark, he said it meant the vessel. I observed all day that Mr. Murdstone was graver and steadier than the two gentlemen. They were very gay and careless. They joked freely with one another, but seldom with him. It appeared to me that he was more clever and cold than they were, and that they regarded him with something of my own feeling. I remarked that, once or twice when Mr. Quinion was talking, he looked at Mr. Murdstone sideways, as if to make sure of his not being displeased, and that once when Mr. Pasnitch, the other gentleman, was in high spirits, he trod upon his foot, and gave him a secret caution with his eyes, to observe Mr. Murdstone, who was sitting stern and silent. Nor do I recollect that Mr. Murdstone laughed at all that day, except at the Sheffield joke and that, by the by, was his own. We went home early in the evening. It was a very fine evening, and my mother and he had another stroll by the Sweetbriar, while I was sent in to get my tea. When he was gone, my mother asked me all about the day I had had, and what they had said and done. I mentioned what they had said about her, and she laughed, and told me they were impudent fellows who talked nonsense, but I knew it pleased her. I knew it quite as well as I know it now. I took the opportunity of asking if she was at all acquainted with Mr. Brooks of Sheffield, but she answered no, only she supposed he must be a manufacturer in the knife and fork way. Can I say of her face altered as I have reason to remember it? Perished as I know it is that it is gone, when here it comes before me at this instant, as distinct as any face, that I may choose to look on in a crowded street? Can can I say of her innocent and girlish beauty, that it faded, and was no more, when its breath falls on my cheek now, as it fell that night? Can I say she ever changed, when my remembrance brings her back to life, thus only, and, truer to its loving youth than I have been, or man ever is, still holds fast what it cherished then? I write of her just as she was when I had gone to bed after this talk, and she came to bid me good night. She kneeled down playfully by the side of the bed, and laying her chin upon her hands, and laughing, said, "What was it they said, Davy? Tell me again. I can't believe it." Apostrophe, bewitching apostrophe, I began. My mother put her hands upon my lips to stop me. "It was never bewitching, apostrophe," she said, laughing. "It never could have been bewitching, Davy. Now I know it wasn't. Apostrophe, yes, it was. Bewitching Mrs. Copperfield, apostrophe," I repeated stoutly. "And pretty, apostrophe, no, no, it was never pretty. Not pretty, apostrophe," interposed my mother, laying her fingers on my lips again. "Yes, it was. Pretty little widow. Apostrophe, what foolish, impudent creatures. Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried my mother, laughing, and covering her face. "What ridiculous men. And they? Davy, dear, apostrophe, well, ma. Apostrophe, don't tell Peggotty. She might be angry with them. I am dreadfully angry with them myself, but I would rather Peggotty didn't know. Apostrophe, I promised, of course." And we kissed one another over and over again, and I soon fell fast asleep. It seems to me, at this distance of time, as if it were the next day, when Peggotty broached the striking and adventurous proposition I am about to mention, but it was probably about 2 months afterwards. We were sitting as before, one evening when my mother was out as before, in company with the stocking, and the yard measure, and the bit of wax, and the box with St. Paul's on the lid, and the crocodile book, when Peggotty, after looking at me several times, and opening her mouth, as if she were going to speak, without doing it, which I thought was merely gaping, or I should have been rather alarmed, said coaxingly, "Master Davy, how should you like to go along with me, and spend a fortnight at my brother's at Yarmouth? Wouldn't that be a treat?" Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.